Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0, the only podcast that focuses on mental health while mixing in movies, music, books, sports, and pop culture. Here are your hosts, Rebecca and Joe Lombardo.
Hey, good morning, everybody. We hope you are having a good Saturday so far. We are doing just fine, if not just a little bit sleepy.
Yep. Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0. Thanks for tuning in and listening, everyone. Also, wanted to say thank you for hanging in with us the last couple of weeks while we were on hiatus.
Yeah, we... Just on a personal note, we took a couple of weeks off because my father became seriously ill and eventually passed away. So we took a couple of weeks and played reruns so so I could get a little time, a little personal time with the family. So we're grateful to all of you that hung in and listened to the rerun shows while we were otherwise occupied.
Yep. Thank you so much for the support, and thank you for reaching out to us via various social media avenues, Twitter and Facebook and whatnot, and offering your support. It meant and means a lot to us during a really difficult time. And it has been a really difficult time,
Yeah, it really has. It's, sometimes you think that you're prepared for that kind of thing because, he was 87 and, I knew that he had lived a good long life, and sometimes you are not prepared as prepared as you thought you were. And it's been a bit of a rough go, I'm not gonna lie to you. But we won't let it affect the show. Hopefully I won't let it affect the show while I'm on here. But please forgive me if my energy or anything kinda plummets a little bit. It's just a side effect of what I've been going through. So
yeah. It can be a draining thing going through that, losing a loved one like that. More so when you're wrestling with various, mental health issues, especially depression.
Right.
It's been a rough one. I don't know if you want to talk about that a little bit or not, babe.
Well, I'll just say that, I was struggling with struggling with my bipolar disorder prior to him getting sick, and when he got sick, I kind of found myself just a bowl of jelly. I was completely unable to cope, and I just couldn't function on a day-to-day basis because I kind of had a feeling, and I know that other people have been through that, and I know that they know the struggle of trying to keep your head above water and going through that difficult of a situation at the same time. So
yeah, the important thing when you're going through that, when you're dealing with a loved one that is sick and or passes, and you are wrestling with bipolar disorder or any other type of depressive state, it helps to have someone you can rely on. I was really close to Rebecca's dad. He welcomed me into the family like nobody else, and I loved him. I had lost my dad in 2004, and he was my second dad, so this has been hard for me as well, but it's been, for me, the most important thing was making sure I was here for Rebecca and making sure that I had her needs taken care of, whatever they may be, you know, and I, she'll tell you, I was constantly asking her, is there anything I can do? Is there anything I can get you? You know, and I'm still doing that, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And just to explain our little bit of, you know, extended discussion that we're having here today, our guest for this morning, has, another event that he was taking part in. So he's going to be calling in just probably about 5 minutes late today. So that's why we're able to talk to you guys a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that we're going to go ahead and head over to our producer, Scott, and have him play us a song just to break up the monotony of the sadness that we're that we're kind of getting into here. So our wonderful producer Scott, if you could play the song by Tara Naomi, it's called Help You Fly.
I know how misery loves a company. Got a party gathered around you now. They come running from far and wide, but who's gonna help you fly? And they come calling when you're falling down. Someone always pick you up off the ground. Oh, nobody wanna see you cry, but who's gonna help you fly? Whoa. Like a little town, people always gonna help you get by, but who's gonna help you fly? And it's a messed up situation when I got the word to call on when the well runs dry. But I just wanna celebrate my life, wanna find someone to help me fly. Whoa.
Welcome back to Voices for Change 2.0. We are glad to have you with us today.
How's she going, eh?
I just wanted to remind everybody that you can communicate with us via Twitter. We do have our Twitter page up at all times, so you can use the hashtag VFChange if you have questions for our guests or questions for us. Also, in the Blog Talk Radio screen, on the screen there, there's a wall of scrolling photos, and underneath that, there's a chat room where you can get in there and have a little conversation, and our producer, Scott, will let us know if anybody has any questions in there, and we can answer them live on the show. We speak to him actually through Facebook Messenger during the show. So a little, you know, covert thing there. You guys don't have to hear us typing to each other or anything. So
we're very sneaky. Everybody yeah. underestimates the sneakiness.
Yep.
So
reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you. And don't forget, please do not forget, hashtag keep talking MH. Do whatever you can to get that into your posts, because we're trying to make a small movement into a huge movement right now. And I really just would appreciate, I would be so grateful if you could remember to keep using hashtag keep talking MH, obviously keep talking mental health, because it's become big and a lot of people are using it and a lot of famous people are using it. And we're very excited about it. And we just, you know, want to keep up the momentum. So,
yep. You know, we're all in this together trying to raise awareness. And it's not enough to just bring it up and raise awareness. We have to keep talking about it. We have to keep the word out. We have to keep telling people, keep talking, and just make ourselves be heard, you know. And we can't give up.
And yes, and on that note, our guest has arrived. So we'll tell you a little bit about him before he is thrown into the fire. We have with us today a really, really great guy. And the first time I talked to him, I was pleasantly surprised at how Southern he is. I wasn't expecting it. And it's sort of melodic to listen to him talk. He's an author. He's a blogger, a podcaster. He's a public speaker and
life coach.
And a life coach. Yes, absolutely. And today we're going to be talking to the amazing Steve Austin. So, Steve, are you with us?
I am here. Hey, y'all.
Hey, how you doing?
I thought I'd throw a little y'all in there since we're talking about that Southern accent.
Wow. You know, Steve, we hadn't talked before. I know you and Rebecca did, but you and I haven't. And, wow, she's not kidding.
It's
an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Yeah, thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure.
I hope it wasn't too much for you to have back-to-back events taking place.
So. No, not at all. We, Lindsay and I got up and went for a little 5-mile run this morning. Went for a little 5-mile run this morning and then had a photo shoot mid-morning, and it's beautiful and not quite too humid yet here in Alabama. It'll be here anytime. So it's been a busy morning.
You went for a 5-mile run. Who was chasing you?
That's exactly right. Yeah, I think it's a sickness I must have caught. I don't know what that's about.
Oh, Lord.
Sorry, I couldn't help myself on that one. As it is, I have to make a note. I am trying to be really good and not give you any grief about either the $6 million man or Stone Cold Steve Austin. So
yeah, we already had that discussion when I talked to him last week.
Yeah, I was not involved in that discussion. So I'm trying to be really good, okay?
Yeah, I've never heard those jokes before.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm trying to be good, you know.
So if you don't have any questions for us, we're going to go ahead and jump right in.
Okay, I'm thrilled.
Yay.
Alrighty, so when did you first begin to sense that something might be going on with you mentally?
Oh, well, let's just start right in with a heavy question. Okay.
That's what we do.
that's what we do here, huh?
Yeah.
You know, I had my first panic attack when I was a senior in high school. I was part of a leadership forum in our county, and so they picked several students from each high school, and we traveled to different businesses, government agencies, things like that, to hear from leaders in our community. And on this particular day, we were at the Department of Human Resources, which in other states might be Child Protective Services or something like that. But we're there where they deal with foster children and kids who have been neglected or abused, that sort of thing. And we're sitting in a conference room, big long wooden table, white concrete block walls. And my first thought was, how could a child feel comfortable in a room like this? It was just, you know, these stark white walls and freezing cold. And I thought, boy, where's the bean bags? Where are the toys? How does a child even begin to feel comfortable here? But the director came in and was given a talk about what they do when a child has been abused. And she brought out this doll, and it's what a social worker or a counselor would use when a child's been abused, to allow a small child to point and talk about what has happened to them, to their body.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
All these memories came flooding back from 15 years earlier. And I was abused as a preschooler. I was molested by the next door neighbor. And nothing had ever been done about it as far as getting me help or even pressing charges. Nothing had been done. And
I'm so sorry.
Well, thanks. Thought that I was okay. I was raised in an extremely religious family. We were in church every time the doors were open. And that was supposed to just make everything all right, make everything better. Take a magic Jesus pill and pray a prayer of faith and everything's all right. And, you know, we know now that's just not the case. I'm still a person of faith and still very involved in a local church here, but sometimes you need more than that. And so the director brought out that doll, and all these memories came flooding back. The room was spinning, my palms are sweating, I've got this knot in the pit of my stomach. And I didn't know what was going on other than I thought, maybe I'm dying. Maybe I'm having a heart attack. And so I got up, fled the room from my peers, from my teachers, people who knew me as the kid who has it all together. You know, I'm on top of the world. And in that moment, it felt like the world was on top of me.
Yeah.
So that would be my first taste of a panic attack and a flashback.
Wow, that's wild. And that's got to be, you know, it's one thing going through something like that, you know, you're sitting in your bedroom or whatever, but like you said, you're surrounded by your peers, you're you know, in the middle of this room in an institution, and it's just, you know, it's like, where do you go? Where's the comfort? You know, especially in a room as stark as what you described. You know, and you're right. How is a child going to feel comfortable in a room like that? You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Number one. But, you know, number two, for a panic attack to hit you like that, and those things are debilitating. You know,
oh, yeah,
I see
awful.
What Beck goes through with hers. Yeah. And, you know, for those that haven't experienced one, you're not missing anything. It's you know, they're rough. You know, I mean, I've gotten them myself in, you know, nothing to the degree that Rebecca has, but it really is crippling, and you feel like you can't do anything. You can't move. You can't function. What steps did you take to get treatment, Steve?
Well, I didn't do anything for 10 years.
Okay.
And hey, folks, you who are listening, that's the wrong answer. went home, talked to my mom, said, wow, I guess this is what you would call a flashback. What do I do? Tell me what happened. We hadn't talked about it. It had been 15 years. And we hadn't talked about this thing that happened that I did not know was going to ripple into my life for the rest of my life. So we talked about it. It was the first time I ever remember my mom not looking me in the eye when we had a conversation. And that was, it was a big deal. She and I are extremely close, always have been. I was the only child for 10 years. And I think now it is, it's the shame of what wasn't done. She was a kid. She was young. She was 19 when she had me. And so I think that there was not, they didn't have the education or the support or whatever they needed to say, hey, this kid's going to need counseling. You're going to need to press charges on this, this 17-year-old boy who knew that what he did was wrong. Unfortunately nothing was done. It was just sort of swept under the rug, and we put the mask of, what I call performance-based Christianity. We put that mask on, and God was just going to make it all better. So I talked to her about it, and then we didn't talk about it again for 10 years. It wasn't until I attempted suicide at the age of 28 that finally we all said, hey, dude needs some help here. He's drowning.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I completely understand that 100%. You know, it's only, there were some attempts for me when I was younger, but I don't think they were as serious as my most recent attempt in 2013. So, you know, I'm completely understand what you mean. You know, I've been there, and I understand 100%. So, do you actively seek treatment today?
So the first 3.5 years after the attempt, I was actively in therapy, counseling, on meds, doing all of those things, all the things that you're supposed to do. The last year and a half, I haven't been near as often as I used to, but things are better. I've done the hard work of recovery and dug really deep and talked about all those awful, horrible, uncomfortable, traumatic, wrong things. And so now I go when I need to. I know myself. I practice self-care on a daily basis. And so I know when I'm feeling particularly anxious or depressed or triggered by something. And, you know, I know that my therapist is just a phone call away, so I can do that. Running is great therapy for me these days. Working out is great therapy for me these days. I meditate every day, and that is huge, huge, huge. Just practicing mindfulness has changed my life. So so now it's, like I say, it's the daily practice of self-care rather than a weekly or bi-weekly visit to the doctor's office.
That's very cool.
Yeah, this whole mindfulness thing is something new for me that I'm going to try to get into. I tried DBT in a group setting several years ago, and I hated it. I didn't care for it at all.
Sure.
But I've been, you know, so many people have come to me and said, you know, this mindfulness thing and this DBT is really the way to go. So I purchased a couple of books, and obviously with everything that's been going on with me, I haven't gotten into that whole thing yet, but that's what I plan on doing this summer, is sort of going through the process myself and trying to see if I can, you know, find a better quality of life for myself, because I still have really, really, really bad lows. And, you know, I know I'm realistic enough to understand that that could probably always happen to me. It's not that I think there's some magic pill. You know, 25 years into the bipolar disorder, I know that it's not going to just go away with some, you know, type of therapy or whatever. So, but I'm hoping that it will help improve how I function on a day-to-day basis. So
That's awesome. There's one of my favorite and easiest ways to meditate is if you have a smartphone. I have an iPhone, and I use the app called Calm, C-A-L-M, Calm. And it's just guided meditation. You can choose from like a 3-minute meditation up to about a 30-minute meditation just based on what you're doing and what you're looking for. There's all these different categories and topics. And, man, it's my favorite way to meditate.
That's really cool. I didn't know.
Thanks for letting me know about that.
Yeah, I didn't know if they had
it keeps
apps
a guy
for meditation.
Like me who's so, yeah. Well, somebody like me who's so ADHD off the charts, it's so great for me to have somebody saying, okay, now we're going to do this for 2 minutes, you know,
yeah.
or blah, 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 repeat after me kind of stuff. So it works for me. It may not work for everybody, but it works for me.
It kind of helps focus you a little bit.
It helps me focus.
Right.
It helps me relax. There's even some great ones in there about forgiveness that I have worked through, and oh my goodness, they're great.
Wow. Yeah. The forgiveness one might be a beneficial thing. I know there are times I wrestle with that.
Yeah, we both do.
Yeah. You know, it's forgiveness is a tough thing, man. I tell you what.
Yes, it is. It's a process. That's for sure.
Yeah,
it's really, I think it's less about the other person and more about what's going on inside you, you know?
Yeah, you got it.
That's my personal opinion on that. Hey, Steve, when did you realize you were becoming an advocate for mental health?
It was a year almost to the day after the suicide attempt. I said, you know, I'm ready to tell this thing. We didn't tell anybody. I was in a hospital. I was in ICU for several days and then on the psych ward for quite a while after that. And we didn't tell anybody. My parents knew, her parents knew, our siblings knew. And outside of that, basically nobody knew.
Okay.
We lied through our teeth to a lot of people and said that I had pneumonia and I was hospitalized and didn't want visitors. And why was that? It was not, I don't think it was shame. I think it was a bit of self-preservation to say, here's this guy who has had his own show, a blog talk radio show years ago. He's had his own show, a pretty well-known blog, a youth pastor. We're in the buckle of the Bible Belt. I needed to focus on me and on my own recovery and not having to comfort everybody else. You know, it's the same idea as when you lose somebody that you love and you're there at the funeral and you're needing to go through your own grieving process, but you're having to comfort all these other people that are there. And that's really tough. And so we just made this decision that we're not going to talk about this thing. We're not going public with this thing until we're ready. And so it gave me, and not just me, but it gave my wife a year to go to counseling with me, to go to therapy with me, to work through this thing that has nearly shattered our marriage and be able to get to a place where we said, okay, now we're ready to talk. Now it's all right to start sharing this with the great big wide world. And so so right at a year after the attempt, I shared my story for the first time on my blog, and it just blew up from there. And haven't stopped talking about it since.
that's good.
Yeah, and you help people in many different ways. You've got, you know, books that you've written, you're a public speaker, you're a life coach. Which came first for you, and how did that sort of all start?
You know, it's just the greatest joy of my life to be able to connect with people and to give them hope wherever they're at, to say it's worth it to fight through this, to fight through the hard times, the mean times, the lean times, the dark nights of the soul, that it is worth it, that there is beauty and goodness that can be found if you're patient and you're kind to yourself. And so I started with the blog GraceIsMessy.com. I started there about 10 years now. I started blogging and took a break in there when I was in that heavy, heavy recovery. But then when I started sharing my story, I came back to it. And so the blogging, it was just the natural thing for me. Writing is therapy for me. And so I'd already sort of built a tribe around that whole concept that Grace is messy. And from there, I'd been a youth pastor already. I was doing the blog thing and the youth pastor thing simultaneously. After the attempt, didn't do that anymore. Didn't do it anymore. I haven't been a youth pastor since. It's just not the right fit for me and for my family. And so, but I had that speaking experience already. And so the two just sort of worked hand in hand. And then this life coaching thing, I started taking a class, a night class on life coaching, get certified. I thought for a while, I thought I wanted to go into counseling, but I go back to the ADHD thing. It's just, man, me trying to commit to 3 or 4 years of college it's just insane for me. But six-month certification in life coaching is perfect. And so I love it. I love it. Being able to ask people the hard questions and get them to realize just how resourceful they are it's just great. It's so fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So that's probably the most rewarding thing then is just being able to coach these people up and, you know, see the positive impact that you're having on their life.
Yeah, it is. It's so great. Any way that I'm able to connect, whether it's speaking to a large crowd or coaching somebody one-on-one or conversing through the blog and this Twitter thing and this podcast thing I'm doing, whatever it is, just being able to connect with people at the point of their need is just great.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that is definitely awesome. And with that, we are actually going to take a quick break.
Okay.
You'll be listening to Alexander Rodriguez, No One Is Alone.
No one here to guide you. Now you're on your own. Only me beside you, still you're not alone. No one is alone, truly no one is alone. Sometimes people leave you halfway through the wood. Others may deceive you. You decide what's good. You decide alone. But no one is alone. People make mistakes. Fathers, mothers, people make mistakes, holding to their own, thinking they're alone. Honor their mistakes, everybody makes one another's terrible mistakes. Witches can be right, and giants can be good. You decide what's right, you decide what's good. Just remember, someone is on your side, someone else is not. While you're seeing your side, maybe you forgot that they are not alone. Light now. things will come out right now. We can make it so.
For Change 2.0. Doggone it. I screwed that up. Welcome back to Voices for Change 2.0. I'm the very screwed up Joe, and with me is my beautiful wife, Rebecca, who's not quite as screwed up as I am this morning.
I don't know about that.
And we're talking to a wonderful gentleman from the beautiful state of Alabama, Mr. Steve Austin. Thank you again for taking time to be with us today, Steve.
Oh, thank you, folks.
And you know what?
As I fall all over my words.
The very, very first show, the very first show that we ever did, I started talking too early. So now Joe's had his talking too early moment, and
yeah,
hopefully we'll get those behind us and won't have to worry about that anymore.
Yep.
But so, Steve, I wanted to ask you, you also do the self-care coaching. What does that entail, and how does someone get in touch with you if they're interested in that?
Yeah, you know, it is so fun. I wrote my second book. It's called Self-Care for the Wounded Soul, and it's a 21-day self-care journal. And so I use bits and pieces of my story each day to talk about how self-care fits into whatever you're recovering from. I think we're all recovering from something. For me, it's abuse, addiction, and a suicide attempt. For somebody else, it might be a codependent relationship with their parents. You know, who knows what the issues are, but we're all, it seems like, somewhere along the way recovering from something. And so with self-care coaching, I use what I've learned through my coaching classes and doing the certification program, coupled with the wisdom of this book that I was able to write with my friend Kate Piper, who's a licensed marriage and family therapist. And so it's sort of a marriage of the two things, this book I've written, this self-care journal, and then life coaching. And so how that works is we sit down and say, we sort of look at two goals. What do you want to work at through this program, whether we're doing 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 12 weeks, what's your end goal? And then each time we get together, what's your goal for today? What do you want to walk away with? What's the one big question, the one big struggle, the one big hurdle that you want to get over today? And we talk through that, and I ask a lot of questions. And for people who are not familiar with coaching and what that is, it's the difference in coaching and counseling is counseling sort of looks backward a lot of times. We look back at things when we're counseling, and a counselor is going to probably give you a lot more advice and that sort of thing. Where coaching, we're looking forward. We're saying, okay, this is our – we're putting the marker in the ground here, and we're going forward. We're not going back. So it's where do you want to go next? How do you want to move forward with your life? What does progress look like for you? And yeah, that's sort of the difference. So people can go to iamsteveaustin.net, and from there you can find anything about coaching, speaking, the blog. It's all there at iamsteveaustin.net.
Now that you mentioned iamsteveaustin.net, why don't you go ahead and mention your other social media platforms so that people know where to find you, so we don't have to do that at the end. We can do it right now.
Sure, they can get there. The easiest thing to do is go to iamsteveaustin.net, and then there's all the icons for Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that. But Twitter and Instagram are both iamsteveaustin, and then Facebook is a little bit older, so it is facebook.com/graceismessy.
Okay. Very cool.
Okay, perfect.
And I noticed when I was on your website yesterday that, you know, you got stuff like links to your books and everything, and it's a great website. By all means, go check out Steve's website. It's a great resource, and you know, it's a great way to connect with him. Obviously, I'm not telling you that, Steve, because you already know. But you know, for those of us that seriously, it's go there, connect with Steve. He's awesome at what he does, and you know, check out the books.
Yeah, before I even ever asked Steve if he wanted to be on our show, what's the word I'm looking for?
If you're talking about Sarah, I would call her his hype man.
No, well, yeah. Sarah Fader is sort of your hype man, Steve. She but his reputation preceded him. That's the expression.
That's what you were looking for. I'm looking at, I pictured Sarah dressed up with a big clock around her neck, kind of like Flavor Flav, so.
Yeah.
Shout out to Sarah.
Yeah, I heard a lot of really great things. I've heard a lot of really great things about you, so I know that you do a lot of really good work, so that was one of the main reasons that I wanted you on the show. But I thought we were running a little bit more out of time than we were, so I'm going to jump into this one question really quick. You know,
sure.
you mentioned that you're also married with a son. Do you get a lot of questions about, you know, maintaining a healthy marriage when one person has a mental illness and the other one doesn't? You know, because Joe and I get that quite a bit.
Hey, babe, do we know anything about marriage and mental health? You know, yeah, we wrote a piece together here a year or two ago. We wrote an article about marriage and mental health, and I don't know, 11 or 12 things to do when you're married to someone with a mental illness. And what do we know about it? I'll run down a few of my the first one is that you are not your spouse's therapist. You're not the doctor. So if your spouse has a mental illness and you don't, or they have one that is different than yours, that it is not your job to fix your spouse. And sometimes that's hard for people to hear, but I want to help. I want to be there. I can see some things that they don't see. I have a different perspective, but that's not your role. Your role is to support. It is to be kind. It is to ensure that they're safe. But it's not your job to fix your spouse. So there are times that Lindsay comes in and the fog of depression is lying low in the living room, and she knows to just say, hey, I'm sorry you're having a bad day. I'm here if you need me. Where 4 or 5 years ago, she might have really had a lot of questions and been concerned and, oh, my gosh, do I need to call the doctor? Do you need to take medication? You know, I tried to really do more. But now she understands that just her presence, just being there, me just knowing that she's my safe space, she's my safe harbor, is huge. So I think that's the first one, is to know that. But the second one that sort of goes hand in hand with this is to have good boundaries and to tell the truth. So just because I have depression, just because I have anxiety, it doesn't give me the right to be a jerk to her. If I'm having a really bad day, I don't get to be a jerk. I get to tell the truth and say, hey, I'm having a really bad day, and maybe go back to kindergarten, and if I can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. But she is able to say, hey, I'm going to need you to woe up. And those days are rare. They're really, I'm one of the fortunate ones. I don't deal with it near like I used to. But every once in a while, those dark days show up. That old black dog comes biting at my heels. And she has to have boundaries to be able to step away and say, you know what, you're just being nasty today. You're just being toxic, and I'm not going to hang around you right now. And that's right. Perfectly fine. The other thing that I would say that sort of goes along with therapy and counseling and recovery, in that is an individual thing for an individual person, that recovery doesn't look the same for everybody. It's the same way with your marriage. nobody's living behind those closed doors with you. Nobody should, you know, if you're looking for advice, if you're going to marriage therapy, counseling, whatever you call it, that's great. But you don't have to have input from everybody. If the mother-in-law on either side is a little difficult, shut it down. And have those boundaries and know that this is your marriage and you're the ones fighting for it. You're the ones living in it every day. And you make those choices that are best for you. So that's sort of, that'd be my top three.
That's really good advice.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks. You know, and that's one thing that I've always said is that those of us that are struggling with a mental illness are not asking you to fix us. We're just asking you to be there. And that, you know, just falls right in line with what you said. Really quickly, I just want to shout out to Erica Riva on Twitter. She is actually being our hype man today, and she's posting quotes of what you've said, Steve, and different things like that.
Love
and
her.
some funny GIFs or GIFs, however the heck you say it. And there's also a lovely young lady by the name of Jennifer S. She is tweeting out some of the information about the show as well. So I just wanted to recognize them quickly. Erica and I had a conversation the other day, and she's amazing. So
she is amazing. She interviewed me a few days ago for her blog, and what in the world? A female atheist with DID and a male Christian who knows nothing about DID. What in the world do we have in common? But we had over an hour long conversation all about faith and life and just, oh, it was so good. She's a great human being.
Yeah, she really is.
Yeah, she's very sweet. I got to bring up something that's a little touchy there, Steve. It's a very kind of a controversial thing, but I know the last time you and Rebecca spoke, you mentioned you were in the process of watching the Netflix show 13 Reasons Why. Did you finish it, and what was your impression?
I did. I actually have a blog coming out Monday all about my reactions to 13 Reasons Why. So there's a lot of them. My first reaction was, whoa. I'm going to need a couple of days to process this. It is not a show. My number one is this. It's not a show that I would want an adolescent to watch on their own. It is very heavy. It is very, very heavy. It is not just a show about suicide. Spoiler alert, you've got bullying in a major way throughout the whole series, and you have two rape scenes, one that is particularly graphic and emotional and just like, oh my gosh. I had to avert my eyes during that one. And confession, I had to fast forward through the very last scene of the movie, and I'll just leave it at that. I had to fast forward through that. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So,
it was hard. It was hard for me, too.
Graphic content warning in front of every single episode. But I think it was fantastic. I think that if their goal was to start a conversation, well, holy cow, they did that.
Yeah.
For sure. They sure did.
It's been a polarizing show, to be sure, you know, just based on some of the stuff I've seen on Twitter talking about it. So I haven't watched the whole thing. I've only watched a handful of episodes with Rebecca. And for me, my concern as her caregiver is, you know, is this going to be triggering for you? Are you okay watching this? Do you want to continue watching this?
Yeah.
It definitely brings the conversation to light, you know, and there's stuff that needs to be addressed. But I think that the trigger warnings need to be amplified for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, I didn't know about it before it came out. I know that there were a lot of people that knew about it ahead of time and everything, and I didn't know anything about it until I started seeing a lot of it pop up in my feed on Twitter. And when I heard what it was about, I was kind of questioning whether it would be the right thing for me to do. And actually, Erica was the first person to say to me, this is not, you know, a binge watch show, you know, take it in little increments, because it's, if you're unsure that it's the right thing for you to watch, then take it really slowly, because it, you know, it's pretty deep stuff. So, you know,
I totally agree with that.
Yeah. I think it's so important, and I think it was really well done. You know, I think we've all been in the shoes of one of the people in the cast at some point or another. I'm not gonna lie, it's tough. It's hard, and that last scene was a little bit overwhelming.
The thing for me, I haven't seen that, so you know, don't tell me. But the thing for me watching it is, you know, we're both in our 40s. You know, obviously, Steve, you're 2 years removed from high school. didn't know where you fell in that range there, so
yeah,
I wasn't gonna
get a few. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Wasn't it? That sounds great. A few.
Yeah, a few years removed from high school. So I'm watching it, and you know, a couple of things that hit me with it were, number one, thinking back to my high school years, you know, and how far removed I am from them now, and going, you know what? Yeah, this is accurate to how things were in high school, you know, and to see that kids are still going through this today. And I think especially, and I think especially when you get to people of our generation, people who were older than us, you know, maybe even people that are a little younger in their 30s, you know, when you're that, you know, a couple decades removed from graduation, you forget. So that if you've got kids and you know, your kids are going through stuff, you think of the good times in high school. I always think of the good times in high school, you know, going to dances or hanging out with my friends. You know, I've been a musician for 30 years. So playing, you know, getting together with my friends and jamming and, you know, all the good stuff. And you forget, or you block out, or you rationalize, well, none of the bad stuff matters now because it's over and done with.
Right.
But a show like this really—it
reminded everyone.
Yeah, you know, in a harsh, real way, how brutal high school can really be, and I think it's kind of forcing parents to, you know, people our age to talk to their kids and be like, "Look, are you okay? You know, are you going through any of this? You know."
Yep.
So, you know, that's one thing I am happy about with the show, because there's nothing on TV anywhere that addresses any of these situations the way that show does. Not the bullying, not anything else. You know, bullying was brutal back then.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Awful. Horrible.
So.
Yeah, you know, when I think back of on the shows that, you know, in the 80s and whatnot that we were watching, the big thing, the biggest thing topic that they conquered was like whether or not you were going to lose your virginity on prom night or cheating and stuff like that. And to have had to progress to teaching our kids about, you know, whether or not suicide is an answer for them.
Or self-harm,
right, it's staggering. It's scary, but, you know, I'm glad they did the show, because, you know, like Joe said, it's getting everybody to talk about it.
Yeah.
Even if they don't like the show, even if they didn't like it and, you know, think it was a bad idea, at least it's getting the conversation going.
Okay. Sorry, we got a message from our producer. Go ahead and and tell me.
Well, we just wanted to let you guys know that we're going to run over a little bit today, just because we started a little bit later. So we'll be going a little bit past 12 o'clock. So we hope you'll stick around with us, and because we still want to get a little bit more in depth with Mr. Steve here. So hope you're okay with that, Steve.
Yeah, sounds great.
But plus, we're really enjoying talking to you. I'm enjoying the dulcet tones of your Southern accent. So,
well, Sarah Fader says my voice is an antidepressant. So there you go, that Southern drawl.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's your hype. That's your hype, man. There,
yeah,
man.
That's right.
So, hey, Steve. One thing I noticed on your website that I wanted to ask you about is what is the self-care challenge?
Yeah, 21-day self – no, 7-day self-care challenge. Sorry, the book is 21 days. If you go to jointheselfcarechallenge.com, it is 7 days from the book. No strings attached. It's just a free way for me to walk you through 7 days of self-care. So if somebody says, what is life coaching or what is self-care? I don't understand. Go to jointheselfcarechallenge.com, sign up with your email. And every day for 7 days, you get a day from my book with some questions, some reflection at the end to just sort of walk you toward at least beginning a journey towards self-care.
That's awesome. That is so cool that you're doing that, people. I'm going to check that out.
Yeah.
You
very
know,
cool.
You know, quite honestly, with you know, everything we've gone through the last couple of weeks with,
right,
you know, Rebecca's dad and everything, you know, it's been tough on both of us. And I know for myself, I think I'm going to check that out and stuff.
Yeah, that's fine.
Great.
And we've actually got a question from the audience being Erica.
Ah, okay.
She would like to know from you, how can you help a spouse get out of the I must help / fix all the things rut that they get into?
Oh, man. You know what? For me, it goes to direct communication. You can't beat around the bush. You can't avoid them. You can't do all the things that you do to try to get away from that when it drives you nuts. You got to say, hey, babe, look, I have a doctor. I'm doing everything that I can do to take care of myself. Unless you see me in an immediate danger, I need you to back off. I love you. I'm so glad that you want to help, but this is not helping. So, you know, those direct communications, direct conversations are tough, and most of us stink at it. But yeah, it is. That's Brene Brown stuff. When you say what you need and you say what you don't need, it's healthy for everybody.
Yeah,
well
definitely.
Said.
Yeah.
And it is. It's really hard. You know, there are times when I know that I need to say something to Beck for whatever's going on. If she's having a tough time, if she's angry or whatever, and I want to fix her, and I know that it's not up to me to fix her. You know, I have to stop myself and say, okay, well, there's all you can do is tell her that you're there for her and tell her that she is loved and just be there for her. You know, there is nothing you can do beyond that, you know?
Yep.
You know, and I didn't know that early on in our marriage, you know, and I would always be, well, do you need to go to the doctor? You need this, you need that. You know, and now I know, and now I need to catch myself and say, okay, it takes a little bit of self-awareness.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
You know, being self-aware is really, really important, and being self-aware in the context of a relationship, especially when one of the people in the relationship is struggling with these myriad conditions. It's not easy. It's definitely a learned thing, you know, and it takes patience.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think Steve, you'll appreciate this. You're a Christian, and I would imagine there's a fair amount of praying that you do. I was brought up Catholic. There was a fair amount of praying that I did. I'm trying to actually find my way back to faith, because for a long time I didn't have it. Not necessarily Catholic per se, but just having a relationship with God. You know, that's my own personal thing. I'm not cramming it down anybody else's gullet or anything. This is just a thing for me. And one thing that I used to do, because I'm a very angry person and I know this of myself, is I would pray to God for patience. And then one day I had an epiphany. I'm praying to him for patience, and he's throwing everything at me that he can. And it finally clicked. I'm like, this is how he's teaching me patience. He's throwing all this stuff at me so that I have no choice but to calm down and be patient. And once I realized that, that's right. Once I figured that out, I stopped praying for patience.
Yeah.
I got it. So,
yeah,
you know.
You've given it to me. I'm going to quit asking for it. Sand the deck. Wax the car.
That's exactly it. So, you know, it just it takes a little bit of self-awareness, you know, and just realizing that, you know, all you can do is be there for the person.
Well, you know, talking about the faith thing, you can't talk about the faith thing and think that I'm not going to have a response. I was a pastor for too long. But, you know... One thing for people, if there's anybody listening who might be in that same boat that you're in, saying, you know, I'm trying to come back to faith, whatever that means. I'm trying to talk to God, whatever that means. I'm trying to pray, whatever that means. I shared a post a week or two ago, and confession, one of those kind of clickbait titles, I stopped praying months ago, and here's what happened. But not clickbait in that I answered that question. You know, I always had this idea of God that God was way out there somewhere, you know, or up there somewhere, and I was down here. And that when you pray, you throw your prayers up there, you know, sort of towards the clouds and hope that he'll, like, reach down and catch them somewhere. He's up there. We're down here. And it's this separation, this distance thing we got going on, a long-distance relationship. And I don't know, things have changed. Starting to do this mindfulness and the meditation and all of that, I have started seeing God as I see God in everyday life and realizing that prayer is everything that we do. So, example, I want my daughter to know that she's valued just exactly as she is, that she's beautiful, no matter what her physical whatever looks like, that she has my attention, that she has self-worth, that I want to build her self-esteem. And instead of asking, oh, God, give my daughter self-esteem, it's in spending time with her and having conversations with her and letting her know that in putting my phone down and making eye contact with her when she's telling me a story, that's my prayer. So for people who are like, ooh, I don't have the words to say, I don't know how to approach this faith thing, all of life, it's all what we do. So
that's
my little side note, my little faith nugget for you.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, not proof is in the pudding, but it's not by our words, but by our actions. So
it is that. We're all preaching a sermon. Whatever faith or no faith we have, we're all preaching a sermon with our words and with our lives every day.
That's awesome. And that's a great observation. I'm going to take that and run with it.
Good deal.
Yeah, you know, and it's so important having, pardon me, having been raised with a really strong male figure in my life. You know, my father was a very, very, very strong man. And, you know, of course I fell into some terrible relationships that, you know, we girls tend to do sometimes when, you know, we're just hoping to get the attention of any guy. And so we, you know, find the wrong guy. But, eventually, because of my father's strength and because of the role in his life, I was able to finally figure out what it was that I needed out of a relationship. And that's, you know, I firmly believe that with his help, I found Joe, because, you know, they loved each other. Like, Joe is crazy about my dad. My dad was crazy about Joe, and my dad never liked anybody. Nobody was good enough for me, according to my dad. And he was not afraid to show that.
Yeah. And it's funny, 'cause you know, the thing that really told me that Beck was the one for me is I was terrified of her dad.
At first.
Eventually, I got to know him and loved the guy. You know, his passing has been as tough for, well, not as tough as it is for Beck, but pretty damn tough. And
so, what I was trying to get at was you being a strong, you know, a strong force in your daughter's life is going to benefit her in many, many ways. That you may not even realize right now, because she's going to know what it looks like to be treated the right way.
Yeah.
And she's going to look for somebody who's going to treat her the right way. And that's so important. I can't even
well,
tell you how.
Well, it'll keep me from going to jail. So that's always
good. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, there's that, you know.
There's that.
You know, really don't need to be doing that. Although my same buddy Steve that I watched Monty Python with, I was telling you about. He's a cop, and we used to always make jokes when he first became a police officer. You know, before he got married and had his daughters and stuff. You know, I always made cracks about, you know, if I have daughters and they bring their boyfriends over, I'm going to be at the kitchen table cleaning my guns and blah, blah, blah. We used to always crack jokes about that. And then he had daughters. So,
yeah,
kind of funny. But
awesome.
And I think that is probably going to wrap up our time with you today, Steve. It's been really, really great talking to you. You've definitely presented some. You know, different perspective for everyone listening, and for me certainly, and I'm sure Joe will feel the same.
I've enjoyed it immensely talking with you.
It's been great, and we're so grateful to you for, you know, making it a priority to get on the show, because I know that you had a busy day and everything's been kind of crazy for you. So thank you so much for coming on.
Yes,
oh,
absolutely.
thank you folks for having me. I had a great time, great conversation, and I sure do appreciate it.
Oh, it's been our pleasure, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So just hang on the line for just one more second, and we're going to go to Blake MacIver's cover of You Can Come Over.
Come over, you can sit on my back porch, we can go for a walk. When it gets colder, you can climb in my car, yeah, we can talk. Sit up all night if you like, I just can't let your restless feet find my front. 'Cause it'd be too easy to throw open that door and go where we've gone too many times before. You'd stay just long enough to leave me again so you can come over, but you can't come in. That record, you give me that look, yeah, you know the one. But by the end of that first verse, the damage would be done. 'Cause one glance of wine always leads to two. When it comes to me and you, oh, it'd be too easy to throw open that door and go where we've gone too many times before. You stay just long enough to leave me again so you can come over, but you can't come in and pretend like we're just a couple old friends, like you don't know how our story ends. You stay just long enough to leave me again, so you can come over. But till I get over you, you can't come in. No, you can't come in.
Join us next week as Rebecca and Joe continue to battle the stigma of mental illness. Follow us on Twitter at Voices for Change RJ and on Facebook at Voices for Change 2.0.